March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
This didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippin Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the second hour of the Phoenix Light Special on the Jerry Pippin UFO Files. We're in the car on Highway 93 headed toward Phoenix. I will be calling Dr. Lynn Kutai again here in a moment. She, of course, has the probably the best documentary out on the Phoenix Lights. And she has an interesting book, too. And we'll talk to her about both of those in a little bit when we replace the call. We are going down to talk to a couple of Jeffs. And, of course, Jeff Woolwine, you know, has been talking about South Mountain for a long time. And all of the hieroglyphics and the drawings and everything that really give you the impression that UFO sightings are nothing new. The Phoenix area, in fact, it may go back centuries. And when we left Dr. Kutai, we were talking about South Mountain and these drawings as well, these carvings on the rocks. We'll be talking with Rich Giordano and also Rob Gratowski up at North Phoenix. I haven't met Rich, so I'm looking forward to meeting him. Rob, we spent some interesting times with him last November. In fact, that's the first time I really, in my entire life, have seen a UFO, seen these strange lights and apparitions coming down from a mountain peak right by Rob's house. And Roberta's ready to go back up there. We're going to investigate the mountain peaks a little closer this time. And we will be going there as well. Roberta Scott is with me. And Roberta, of course, is our producer, and she's driving the car as I'm talking to you here on the radio. Oh, yeah, before we go on with the show, I need to plug Rich Giordano's website. It's very interesting. You need to go over there and take a look at it. Seeing UFOs. C-N-U-F-O-S. CNUFOs.com. Well, I look forward to meeting him. I haven't met him before. We're going to pick up our conversation with Lynn Kutai when we come back. We're going to talk about South Mountain. Speaking of South Mountain, remember the last time we were in Phoenix, we talked to Jeff Woolwine about all of his sightings down in the south part of Phoenix.
Well, because that's where all the sightings seem to be taking place. Mesa, Gilbert, Chandler, and sometimes in Tempe. The lady that videotaped the Phoenix Lights, her name is Dr. Lynn. She lives in Paradise Valley. And she said that when she was videotaping them, they would come back like every once a year. But there was a guy making a newscast like at least once a month, and he was living in Gilbert, and he was seeing them almost on a weekly basis. So I just put two and two together. Hey, this lady in Paradise Valley, she's got to wait a year. This guy in Gilbert, he's getting them on a weekly basis. And lo and behold, within a week and a half, my son and I was sitting out on the porch, and I just happened to look up, and I saw one to be very close, and then two way far in the back. They were going towards the mountain. They were going towards South Mountain.
That was Jeff Woolwine. We'll be talking to him in person later in the show as we continue our series on the Phoenix Lights. Don't go away. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment. Fate. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.
75% of Americans believe in UFOs. 30% of Americans believe UFOs are vehicles from other worlds. And 3% of Americans believe they have been abducted by aliens. That's over 8 million people. They're out there, aren't they?
Welcome to the UFO Files Show with your host, Jerry Pippin.
Welcome back to the second hour. Where we talked with Bill Hamilton about the Phoenix Lights and the sightings that occurred in 1997. We then talked to Dr. Lynn Kitai, and she's written a book and done a documentary on the Phoenix Lights. And we have her on the phone again from Phoenix. Welcome to the show. This, by the way, is being brought to you in part by Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine, Tales of the Strange and the Unusual. October is issue 666, being published continuously since 1948. Kind of interesting that their Halloween issue turned out to be issue 666. For more information or to subscribe, go to fatemag.com, FATEMAG.com. Dr. Kitai, it's good to have you back. When we went away for the break, we were talking about South Phoenix and South Mountain, actually, and drawings, hieroglyphics, carvings in the rocks and things like that. You don't live very far from South Mountain. You live in South Phoenix, I think.
Right. Estrella, by the way, Jerry, means star in Spanish.
Uh-huh.
And the history of the Gila Bend River Indian community that live in between South Mountain and the Estrella Mountains is that name was given to those mountains because these orbs have been showing up for centuries.
Yeah, Dr. Lynn, I know what you're talking about. Now, I haven't been down to South Mountain to see the hieroglyphics or whatever they are, but I have been up around Pinnacle Peak in North Phoenix, and there's some things there that really kind of lead you to believe that these things have been around for not just years, but maybe centuries.
And again, it's happening worldwide, and a lot of times, I have to tell you, these things hover, these orbs hover over nuclear bases for some reason. Are they trying to tell us something? They don't do any harm. In fact, there's an incident which I describe in the book, because I found it very intriguing, of two separate nuclear silos that were miles apart in Montana in the 60s. And it was interesting that, and I believe that the date was March 31st, 67, which was like amazingly, you know, ours was 97, March 13th. But at any rate, there were two separate silos that had UFOs, unidentified aerial phenomena, right outside their gate, and the head people were called by the guards, and within moments, both of them, unbeknownst to the other silo, went down. It just stopped for hours. And then suddenly it came back online, and that's, like, impossible. So, you know, what was the message? Certainly if they wanted to harm us, they could have done so at that point and many other times. But, on March 13th, people saw these hovering over, these orbs hovering over Palo Verde nuclear plant.
Yeah, we've had reports about that, too. The name of the book is The Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, and it's published by Hampton Roads Publishing Company. Now that you've written a book, you're going to write some more?
Right.
And
I've done some pretty big projects. The book, again, because I have 750 pages that I have to squeeze down to 220, was a giant feat for me. I never intended to be an author. I've written curriculum in my day for my health programs, but this was certainly something that I was driven to do. It was important to do. I don't know that I want to do one again. I haven't thought that far ahead. Right now, I just want to get the book out there and the documentary out there. That's why I came forward after 7 years of anonymity. if I could have made a wish, I would have wished that I could have stayed anonymous. And even though I let my video and 35 millimeter out there, which really was the important thing, not me, I knew once I started making the decision of whether to come forward or not and investigating it, that unless I did, it would probably sit on a shelf.
You know, Doctor, you've got an interesting background. Before you became a physician, you were actually quite active in show business.
Yeah, I if I could have made a wish for a career, it would have been a singing career. My voice is a gift. I can't take credit for it, but I have a 3-octave voice. I've been singing since I was 8 years old in professional theater. I toured with Gordon McRae in Oklahoma and Betty Grable and Guys and Dolls, and I understudied Barbara Eden in Sound of Music. And If you saw the movie Raising Arizona,
yes,
I played the mother, Florence Arizona, in that. That was a fun experience.
Fantastic.
But I kind of combined that hat, that expertise, with my medical training to produce video and workbook curriculum.
Yeah, didn't you do some TV reporting for a television station at one time?
Well, actually, I started. I got the idea while I was actually, in my junior year of medical school at Temple University Medical School. I was on a rotation at St. Chris.
Did you say Temple University? Yeah, do you know Dr. David Jacobs?
Sure, I don't know him personally, but we talked over the phone, and I know he's a professor of history there. But when I was out in the community, and actually at the pediatrics hospital rotation in my junior year, I wondered why, you know, what happened to kids that didn't get immunizations at the time, and they said, well, if they don't come to us, you know, they don't get them. And I said, well, if they're not coming to you, why don't you go to them? And they said, oh, we never thought of that. So we actually formed a class that we would take a nurse and a doctor and a student from the university medical school and go out into the community. And we're talking really indigent areas here. I mean, the homes were boarded up. If people saw Rocky, the movie Rocky,
yes, uh-huh,
those homes were mansions compared to the areas that we went to. I mean, they were really, really living in squalor. And when we would go in, and they didn't trust the medical community. They were frightened of it, and we certainly wanted to assure them. And once we got, you know, in the door, what I saw was really, I mean, really took me back. I mean, here were 6 to 10 kids living in a home, and they had no furniture, very little lighting, you know, filth and et cetera. But they had the TV, and the TV was on. And I thought, oh, how can you reach these people with just health tips on how to prevent heart attack or what to do with a burn or whatever. And I actually, during my residency, went to NBC with the idea, and they thought it was a great idea, had me start doing a program 2 weeks later, and I ended up being the resident health reporter for NBC in 76 with Jessica Savage.
Yes,
that.
Sure. I was a big fan of Jessica.
Yes, she was one of the anchors. I certainly learned a lot from her.
And, you know, and you were kind of a pioneer in that field, and I must say you're much better looking than Bob Arnone, who followed you later with NBC and CBS.
Well, thank you. I just saw the need, and you know, just like this, I just saw the need, and I wanted to do something productive. And ended up really being very successful. It went into syndication, and when we moved to Phoenix from Philadelphia in 1980, it was kind of neat because one of the stations here had already picked up the syndication, and people knew who I was.
Fantastic.
It was really neat. And then NBC here as well asked me to.
So your doctor husband, he's from Philadelphia as well?
Yes, he is.
And but you've been in Phoenix since 80.
Yes, and it's been wonderful. We just love it here. And it's, you know, what can I tell you? I'm going with the flow. Anybody that reads the book will learn, you know, the month after the mass sighting, some really bizarre things happened to me personally. And I won't go into it and ruin it, but, you know, that really woke me up that something definitely was going on, and I wanted to get to the bottom of it. And I decided a month after the mass sighting that I was just going to go with the flow. If my friends kept telling me, because I kept asking them, you know, why do I have this? Why do I have these pictures? Why do I feel compelled to take them? I don't know anything about this subject. I mean, nothing. I mean, the only movies that my husband and I ever saw were Close Encounters and E.T. and our two boys, who are men now. grew up as a family, we watched the original Star Trek series because it was so, you know, the messages were so beautiful. And that was it. I mean, that was it. So, you know, I just had no idea why I had this, but my friends would say, Lynn, if anybody can do something credible and professional with this, you can. This is what I've been doing for almost 30 years.
Well, you actually, you know, you've been out circulating with the well-known and the powerful. I mean, I think even the late Senator Barry Goldwater got involved.
Yes. Actually, I try to, you know, really leave no stone unturned. I try to meet with Senator McCain and Senator John Kyle here, which never happened, unfortunately. I really try to do my homework. And you know, I have to tell you, Jerry, there is a chunk of history missing from our history books. And it didn't become so apparent until I was asked after giving presentations for Barnes & Noble and Borders bookstores throughout the state, some parents had seen me and asked me to present at their school, middle school, which I was really blown away. I mean, that's my life's work, is imparting vital health issues to youth kindergarten on through college. So that really thrilled me, and it actually was about the time that I was deciding whether to do the documentary or not, and it really pushed me to do it, because when I walked in, to over 200 kids were sitting there, 200 middle school students, and you could hear a pin drop. This was the last period of the day. The teachers couldn't believe how quiet they were. They just thirst for this information because, again, there is nothing in our history books about this. And, you know, once I realized how impactful just that one visit was and how much information they really, really wanted to learn from this, I thought, geez, you know, besides the book, I've got to do the documentary. So that really prompted me to do the documentary, and I gave up my job at the Arizona Heart Institute to do that.
We're talking with Dr. Lynn Kitai. And Dr. Kitai, of course, you are in Phoenix, and we're almost there. We're going to pause now for a commercial word, then I'm going to come back and talk to you a little bit more about your video and your book and how they can get it. But first, I want to talk to you about a unique gift that would be great for Christmas, the holidays, for birthdays, you name it. Are you ready for this idea? How about having a star named after that very special person that you know? Thousands of people have stars named after them, yet it is unique enough to be very, very special for that very, very special person. Stop and think about it. Naming a star after the one you care about is an imaginative gift that definitely will please that special someone, and it'll make you a star to them at the same time. The Name a Star database has hundreds of thousands of stars numerically designated by the world-renowned Smithsonian Astrophysical Institute. Each star is copyrighted with its precise stellar coordinates, allowing the star recipient, friends, family, or anyone really, including future generations, to identify the star by name and by location. They can actually locate the star in the sky using a telescope. It's fun, it's unique. Go to the website jerrypippin.com or vegasradioshow.com and you'll see a banner that says Name a Star. Click on that Name a Star banner and read all about it, and you can actually do all of the registering right there. Prices? Well, they start as low as $25 plus change. Do it now. It's a gift that will keep on giving for years and years to come. Dr. Lynn Kitai, let's talk a little bit about your book and your DVD and how people can actually order this thing and read it or see the DVD themselves.
Yes, it is. Right now, if you get on my website, www.thephoenixlights.net, you can see a two-minute trailer for the DVD, and you can order the DVD and the book right from there.
Dr. Lynn, before we go any further, you got into this documentary business kind of by accident. I mean, you were out peddling your book, right? And all of a sudden the idea hit you. Is that the way?
Barnes & Noble and Borders bookstores throughout the state. Some parents had seen me and asked me to present at their school, middle school, which I was really blown away. I mean, that's my life's work, is imparting vital health issues to youth kindergarten on through college. So that really thrilled me, and it actually was about the time that I was deciding whether to do the documentary or not, and it really pushed me to do it, because when I walked in, over 200 kids were sitting there, 200 middle school students, and you could hear a pin drop. This was the last period of the day. The teachers couldn't believe how quiet they were. They just thirst for this information because, again, there is nothing in our history books about this. And, you know, once I realized how impactful just that one visit was and how much information they really, really wanted to learn from this, I thought, geez, you know, besides the book, I've got to do the documentary. So that really prompted me to do the documentary, and I gave up my job at the Arizona Heart Institute to do that.
We have a link to that from our website, and you will
absolutely
sign the book.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. I mean, you know, the bottom line, Jerry, and I thank you so much for doing this and just making people aware that it's out there, is to just look at it. That's all I ask people to do. I try to make it as inexpensive as possible so that everyone can get it. Certainly they have it at libraries if people can't afford it. But, you know, the bottom line is to just look at the data. It speaks for itself, and it's so important. And, you know, again, it's stuff that's missing from our history books.
You know how you are in broadcasting, people are, and I'm going to ask you a personal question here. Your husband's name, I think, is Frank. Did you guys come to the belief together, or were you ahead of him?
Because everyone in their own time. In fact, when I give, when we show the documentary, I always give an introduction to this effect, because there's always somebody in the audience that was dragged there by
Oh, yes.
Usually it's the kids that drag them.
Right, and in fact, I talked to a woman yesterday who believes she's had abduction experiences and believes she has an implant, and she's been seeking out several doctors, you know, over the years. And basically her husband still doesn't believe her.
You know, I have to tell you that he has been slower. I mean, he's on several state boards and hospital boards and very, very busy, and just didn't have the time as I did, which I took. I mean, I pushed my professional life aside to do so. But he just didn't have the time to really investigate it like I did. And the more I investigated it, even though I had, because I was a skeptic too, I mean, even though I had the close encounter that I, you know, not only saw up close and personal and experienced, but also took pictures of, which I couldn't be here today if I hadn't taken the pictures. So I recommend people to carry a camera if you're out there looking. But the other thing is that I certainly, because I was so entrenched in learning about it and opening myself up to it, was much, much more open than he was, quicker than he was, because he's, you know, he's a show me a piece of the ship.
Well, sure, that's kind of the way I am, or was, when I first got into this. I wanted to go out and knock on the door and interview one of these ETs, you know? And I'm still looking forward to that opportunity. It just hasn't happened. But even after all these years, I guess I would describe myself as agnostic in many ways when it comes to this subject. I don't think anybody's telling me a lie, but at the same time, it's just hard to accept, you know?
And for months. I mean, people, you know, really credible people, and we're talking from all walks of life, from truck drivers to children to astrophysicists to, I mean, just incredible amount of credible people saw this thing and experienced this thing, and yet there was no investigation and no explanation. And it wasn't until 5 months after the fact that USA Today came out with a giant article that opened it up to international scrutiny. And once the media from all over the world came here to start interviewing the witnesses and just heard it from their mouths, because when you talk to the witnesses, and I do have a number of them described in the book, I mean, the stories, and certainly in the documentary as well, and that's why, another reason I did the documentary, because when you hear it from their mouths, I mean, it's so heartfelt, and it's so real, and it's so descriptive. I mean, they really go into detail. You know, they were asking from all over the world, why isn't there an investigation? Why isn't there an explanation? And within a couple of weeks, suddenly I get a call, because I had investigated myself with the military, and I have to tell you, and I talk about that in the book as well, a couple of my conversations, I mean, they were more curious of what I had than giving an explanation for it. They were just as curious, okay? And then suddenly I get a call from the Air National Guard. Oh, we forgot. This is 5 months after, by the way. We forgot to look at the log for visiting snowbirds. Air National Guard and the Maryland Air National Guard was in town sending off flares, so that must be what some people saw. Now, they never, ever officially said that it was flares. They just made the statement, maybe that's what some people saw. And when you really think about that, number one, maybe they were sending off flares, and that's okay. I mean, you know, they would have been silly not to have done something to divert people away from the unknown. But at any rate, I was still open, as the other people were. Hey, if you sent off flares, that's fine. Do it again. And, of course, as we know, as I said earlier, I have pictures from 95 and 2 months before the mass sighting that absolutely show unequivocally the same phenomena in the same location. So whoever did this, I have photographs that prove that, and it's evidence. I mean, I don't know what it is, again, but it's evidence that's extraordinary that in itself proves that whoever did this did it at least three times. And I have some after the mass sighting, too, that proves it. So, you know, fine. If it's military, do it again. Obviously, whoever did it three times. And the Maryland Air National Guard, by the way, was not in town 2 months before the mass sighting. So somebody else did it other than them, if that was them. Well, you know, we waited and waited and waited and waited. They never reenacted it, even though hundreds of people and media were asking for them to reenact it until 1 week before the third anniversary of the Phoenix Lights event. And they were supposed to do a two-week run. They announced it in the papers, and we're talking across the front page of the newspaper. Three Air National Guards are coming into town. I think it was Maryland, New York, and not Maryland. It was New York, California, and Michigan. We're coming into town to send off flares and show everybody the Phoenix Lights. Well, it was supposed to be a two-week run. By the second day, it was scrapped because it was a joke. I mean, it just was very different than what we had seen and photographed. And I have to tell you, anybody that's listening that wants to get on my website as well, thephoenixlights.net, at that point, and they used to call me Dr. X, by the way, the investigators here, and they were the only ones that knew what I had, and they stayed silent with it for 7 years. I mean, I bless them. I mean, they were so kind to me and not divulging until I was ready to put it out there, that Dr. X was me. But at that point, I came forward as Dr. Lynn, because I thought Dr. X was a little out there, for MSNBC and a Fox report, and you can take a look at that. Take a look at the MSNBC report, because, you know, I just wanted people to see the difference between the unknown, the flares, and there's such a significant difference. You know, that kind of blew that out of the water and pushed me forward to say, hey, you know, something's really going on here. I've got it.
Dr. Lim, we will once again talk to you again, hopefully in the future, about this, and hope to run across you personally someday.
Well, I hope so too. And you know, just get on my website. They certainly can take a look at a 2 minute trailer for the documentary, which is exciting. And you know, I hope people just read the book, and I love to hear from people. The other thing on my website is that there's a contact, and you know, so many people have contacted me and just shared their own experiences, and that's healing in itself, Jerry. That is so important now. Not only do we need to heal our earth, but we need to heal each other. And just getting this out in the open, and again, if somebody wants to feed into the flare theory or doesn't want to deal with this at all, that's okay. That's okay. If it's a bunker, and you know what they are, if it's a bunker who discredits or tries to discredit the messenger so people won't listen to the message, that I have a problem with, because they're the ones that hopefully soon will be the ones that are laughed at, not the people that come forward and share their stories.
Dr. Lynn, it's been a joy. You mentioned lots of things I'd like to have gotten into. You've had a varied and interesting career.
Well, it's at this point I'm on a new road, and I'll take it where it takes me, and hopefully that, you know, it really can help people to open them up to what's to this new reality, because it is a new reality, and it's something that is exciting. And once you look into it and see that you know, there's so much to this, and so much that has not been told. I mean, there's such a long history of this, and other cultures and countries are much more open to it, and I think it's time that we follow suit. Don't you?
I agree with you, and it's a good way to end the show. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Hope to talk to you soon.
Wow, there's Del Webb's Sun City over there to the right. We're in Phoenix. Next stop, Jeff's house. Actually, we're going to visit two Jeffs, and the interesting thing is they have lots of UFO pictures. Coming up.